You're listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5. Up next is Reality Sandwich. Enjoy some music.
And the shedding of blood, beyond the solution we've got is love. Upward and words rise from the mud. Babylon fighting against poor people. What is good over evil? Wicked men fighting against poor people. What is good over evil?
Police oppression, police oppression. Them kill the ghetto youths with the queen weapon. Police oppression, police oppression. For stop the ghetto youths, that is all them demand. Police oppression, police oppression. Mr. Babylon, the Rasta man, a step on. Police oppression, police oppression. When you heard the ghetto youths, them no learn a lesson. Wicked man, don't wash with the youths, them.
You're listening to KPOO 89.5, San Francisco. I'm your host, Dr. Ray Farrick-Biggs, and this is Reality Sandwich. Every week we explore themes around consciousness change and transformation. Our guest today is Amanda Blake. Amanda is a master somatic coach and the founder of Stonewater, a leadership training company supporting leaders who are using their business as a lever for progressive change. A former international competitive athlete, and a successful entrepreneur, she is skilled at cultivating high performance in herself and others. In addition to her private coaching and training practice, she also teaches at Strozzi Institute, where the work of embodied leadership originated. She is the author of the forthcoming book, Your Body is Your Brain, a User's Manual for Leaders and Change Agents. She holds a bachelor's degree in human biology from Stanford University, has been working in the field of sustainable business since 1995. Mandy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. It's nice to talk to you today.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. Tell the listeners and ourselves just a little bit more about your background, how you came into doing this work.
I really came to the work of somatic leadership development through both a personal and a professional path. So professionally, I had been coaching entrepreneurs for many years, and I found that sometimes they would really get stuck in ways that I felt I just didn't quite have the tools to help them get unstuck. And I also was stuck in a personal situation in my own life, in an intimate partnering relationship. And I just had this intuition for myself, maybe if I look at something to do with the body, that might help me shift things. And at that time, I was also exposed to Strozzi Institute, where the work of embodied leadership was formulated or originated. And I went there to study, and I really found that I had found my work and my life's path. It was a way that I could make change, positive changes in my own life and direction, and I was really able to help my clients make some of the changes where they were stuck, too.
That's great. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about what is somatics?
Yeah, somatics is, we talk about it as a path of embodied transformation. And by path, I mean it's a process of ongoing learning. And by embodied transformation, I mean it's change that you engage in or put yourself into that then becomes second nature to you. So it's like those places that really where you get stuck. You find yourself doing the same thing over and over, even though you know it's not useful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Really being able to embody the change you seek helps you get unstuck, because it helps those new habits or practices become second nature and become more at hand.
Right. Well, it's interesting you mentioned practice, because I know whatever we practice, we get good at. And if we have those old, like you said, those old habits, and we're unconscious of what those are, then we tend to perpetuate those.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A big piece of this process of learning is awareness, and really coming into a new awareness of what it is you're doing and how it is you're doing it. But it differs from most, I don't know if you could call them insight-based or cognitive modalities of change, those that stop at awareness or insight. But the practice is really the piece that helps you implement change in your own life in a much more grounded way, and in a way that gets rooted in your body, in your nervous system.
That's really interesting. So as far as embodied leadership, I read that in your bio. What distinguishes embodied leadership from, let's say, another leadership training course that I might take, like in school or at a corporate training class?
Well, I think one of the things that you'd find that is very similar is that we'd be focused on the qualities that a leader needs in order to do their job. So qualities like commitment and vision and integrity and an ability to engage others and communicate clearly and get things done with others. So we're looking at all of the same skills, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But what really distinguishes embodied leadership and what makes it different is that we're not doing that by looking at theories and models. We're not doing that by looking at bios of famous leaders or case studies. We're really doing that by looking at the self, and very much including the whole self, including the physical body, in the learning. So rather than sitting and listening to a lecture, you'd be up moving around, interacting with people, and actually engaged in physical practices that would help you communicate better, for example, or that would help you develop the qualities of vision and commitment and being able to sustain a commitment to a vision over time. So we actually engage in physical practices, which I'm not aware that that's done anywhere else.
And what would be an example, like when you say physical practices, like what would that look like if I was going to be in one of your courses?
So here's something that comes up for people a lot. You know how someone asks you to do something, and inside you kind of have this niggling feeling, and you kind of can almost tell that you don't want to do it, but out of your mouth pops a, yes, I'd be delighted
right.
to, sure. So common problem for a lot of people. And one of the things that we teach is how to say no, how to decline a request without damaging a relationship. And one of the reasons that people sometimes have a hard time saying no is because they care about people, they care about relationships, and they're afraid that saying no is somehow gonna hurt that or break that connection. So we'll work with people on both feeling the sensations that come up when that no arises, and kind of being able to attend more closely to your internal state, and then work in physical practices where someone walks towards you with a request. And rather than going with them in the same direction, like turning your body and moving with them in the same direction, which would be essentially what we do in conversation when we say yes, we'd actually reach out to them, make a connection with them, but physically turn them around and move them in the other direction and say, no, thank you, I decline, I choose not to do that. what happens through a practice like that is people actually, first of all, a lot comes up, like a lot of fear, discomfort for people for whom this is something challenging to do. There'll be a lot of energy running through their physical system, and that'll come up, and that you can feel that in sensation. So we have people really feel that, all that juice and aliveness moving through them. And then also, through process of settling and centering oneself, and it's a process that we teach that helps people kind of come back to themselves, even when there's a lot of intensity or energy moving through their system, learning to just settle in and be able to say that no, or make that decline, or move their body, move their being, move their behavior in such a way that is both effectively connected and also effectively communicates their message or what's true for them in that moment. So that's a little bit what the training looks like. And then what we speculate, and this is what I'm writing about in my book, is how does that actually change your nervous system over time? With enough practice, my speculation based on the research that's been done thus far on the brain and how the brain and body learns is that the neural pathways that had you automatically overriding your own no begin to atrophy, and the neural pathways that have you able to say yes in conversation begin to strengthen. And that we can do that, we can access those neural pathways by working directly with the nervous system, in other words, directly with the physical body.
Interesting.
It seems like there's kind of two different phases, probably a lot more phases, but one is filling those energies that come up, the yes or no's in your body. A lot of my clients are at the point now where they're somatically aware enough to feel those yes and no's, but they're struggling with what to do with it. Like you said, it's my body saying, yes, I want to do this, or no, I don't want to do this, and then the analytical mind and the conditioned tendencies push you into what you don't want to do. So where do you start when you have a person who has the ability to feel those energies in their body but don't know what to do with them?
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. I mean, I think the awareness is such an important skill, and I want to acknowledge that there are many people out there, especially with the popularization of things like yoga and tai chi and meditation, more and more people are getting more and more self-aware, which I think is a very good and useful thing. And even so, there's just a huge swath of people who really have a challenging time even just feeling those sensations.
Right.
So I just want to acknowledge that, because I think people start at many levels, and I don't know if I want to say levels, but people just start with, you know, a different starting game of cards, if you will.
And just getting to that awareness phase is huge. You
know,
just being able to feel what's going on is a huge win right there.
It's very significant, and there are ways in which we, no matter what, there's sensation happening in our bodies all the time.
Right.
Most of the time, we're tuned out to that. It's happening below our conscious awareness.
Right.
Bringing it into conscious awareness just gives us a whole huge amount of information that we then can respond to with more intelligence if we're aware of it.
Right.
Now, then there's that challenging piece, which is like, oh, no, now I can see it, but I can't even do anything about it. And that's the part that makes you really want to knock your head against the wall. It's like, oh, I know, I do this thing, I don't want to do it, I know I shouldn't do it, I even know what to do instead, and
right.
I can't enact it.
That's kind of been the joke in the yoga field, and with my friends, we call that entering the jaded yogi zone.
Yeah.
That's great.
I've heard that from other yoga practitioners, where sometimes it's actually really hard for some folks, even who are very, very self-aware, to match their behavior to who they really most want to be.
Right, right.
And so getting back to your earlier question, which was, you know, then what do you do when you get to that level of self-awareness but you're still stuck?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I see training the body as having huge value and relevance, because what happens is we take it out of conversation, if you will, mm-hmm. as opposed to, and out of the intellect where you go, oh, I know what I should do. And you actually start to train your body to move in to physically move towards
right.
someone with whom you would need to have an interchange that feels difficult to you.
Right.
And then your whole system is going to have a whole reaction to that. You go, oh, wow, this is how I react. Take that back to your own life.
Right.
You move into that situation. And so if you practice enough times moving in and physically turning someone in the case of saying no, for mm-hmm. example,
mm-hmm.
you practice that enough times, your nervous system will go, oh, this is a move that feels familiar.
Right.
Right. It's like anytime you learn something new, I can just think back when I first learned to ride a bike or learn to drive. It's really awkward and feels really uncomfortable. And then over and over, it becomes easier and easier until it's second nature.
Yeah. It's like the more you practice, it's like any muscle. It builds up and builds up.
Right.
I was reading an article. I don't know the source. I wish I could quote it for you. But it was about overcoming people who have chronic lying, people who lie all the time. And they said one of the best things to do is not to try to stop lying, but instead try to tell more truth throughout the day. So you go through the day and you keep track of the honest things that you say, and you build that muscle up to the point where the lying muscle just starts to atrophy.
Yeah, that's absolutely the way to look. And I think you've pointed out something really important there too, which is your energy will go where you're paying attention.
Yeah.
So if you pay a lot of attention to the hole that you keep falling into over and over and over again, mm-hmm. Then you'll perpetuate it, because you're really you're continuing to strengthen the neural systems in your body that attend to that. And there are literally physiological changes that happen based on where you place your attention. If instead you attend to the place that may feel less familiar and less practiced, but you pay attention to it over and over and you practice it over and over, then you, again, physiologically change both the nervous system and the musculature in your body so that you can more easily make those moves in conversation and in action.
Mandy, you know, this is really, it was really enlightening, I think, for myself and a lot of listeners. And I was just reflecting on one of the practices that we learned up at Strozzi that's been really powerful. You mentioned earlier around centering. And for that, that has just given me such a different way of responding to conflict, responding to things that might, you know, pull me out and out of, you know, into my head. I was wondering if you could share with the listeners a little bit about center and centering and how that could be a useful practice for them, maybe even lead them through an exercise.
Yeah. So what I'll say about centering first is that it starts with becoming more aware, as we've been talking about, like what's going on below your thinking self, below mm-hmm. your chin. And really what it's about is, or what the practice of centering can do, is help you embody and take action on what you care about. So it's a way of organizing your physical system and your emotional system and your thinking self all behind something that matters to you.
Mm.
And I'd be happy to take listeners through a centering practice if you think that would be useful, Rafe. I think it would probably take about 5 or 10 minutes of our call. What do you think?
Or maybe just explain it. Give them an outline of how they could do it, and then maybe the listeners could try it on their own.
Well, you know what I'll suggest is I'll give a brief outline, and then I'll also mention that I'm actually about to launch a centering guide on my website that any of the listeners can get access to. It's free, and it's meant to do exactly what you're talking about, which is to kind of get a taste of what, how does this work and what's it all about.
That's excellent.
So the basic process of centering is to really, just by way of outlining, is to really center yourself in physical space. We're three-dimensional beings, so we're, you know, we have length, floor to ceiling, if we're standing, width, side to side, and depth, front to back. And we kind of, if you could imagine a sphere around you, get very centered in that physical space, and then centered in a felt sense, in your own center of gravity, which physically is just an inch or two below your navel, and really feeling that spot from the inside and connecting from there with what you care about, what's important to you, the person that you want to be, and what you care to bring into the world. And again, with enough practice, this practice of centering is, what's useful about it is that it's non-equipment intensive, and it's available to you in any situation wherever you might be. So you're in the middle of traffic, you're getting stressed out, you can center. You know, you're going to make a proposal to a venture capitalist to get funding, and it's really high stakes. You can center, and you'll probably have plenty of opportunities to center and recenter yourself throughout that high stakes presentation and conversation, right? So whatever it is that you're facing that might be challenging, centering is a very, very useful practice for that. And it's, again, it's really about not just calming your system, although it has that effect, but mostly organizing and aligning all of you, all of who you are, behind the person you want to be, what you care about, and what you want to bring into the world.
I think also these centering practices, what they do is they give you great clarity as well and let you kind of easily drift into the moment and see things kind of how they are without that crazy conditioned mind that we all lug around all the time.
Yeah, one of the things, and I think one of the values of this particular way of centering, if you will, is that it is very sensation-based. So there are lots of different tools for that kind of share the name, right, that call themselves centering out there, and some will be about the breath, or some will be about focusing your mind and your attention. This includes all of that, but goes beyond that to really be focused on what are the sensations in your body, like what's moving, what's streaming, what's trembling, what's warm, what's cool, what's sweating, what's chilly. And the value of really bringing yourself to sensation, or bringing your attention to sensation, is that sensation only happens in the present moment. And so it inherently brings you present. And that's super useful because it kind of clears away some of the, it almost automatically clears away some of the filters by which we normally operate in the world. So we're going about our daily lives, we're making interpretations about what happens to us, and, you know, somebody comes at us with a conversation, we have a whole story behind that about what they really want and why they're here, and, oh, I'm delighted to see you, or, oh, you're really bothering me, or whatever it might be. And the practice of centering and really organizing yourself around what's my sensation in the present moment just opens all those filters so that you can be more fresh and literally more present for whatever's happening. And that just gives you greater access to all of your intelligence.
Mandy, that is a great practice and insight, because I know for myself in many conversations, if I'm with someone and I'm thinking about, I have a certain agenda, and I want to have a conversation with them, I'm thinking about where I want the conversation to go, and I'm not really listening to the person. But when I center, I'm able to really be open and fully hear the conversation, and then have more possibilities of how things could how we can partner together.
Right. And instead of, you know, sitting there thinking about what your response is going to be, you're just
right.
listening to them. And then the response comes naturally from a true self, from a calm, you know, non-conditioned analytical point of view. So we're going to take a little break, listen to some music. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. And keep listening. Reality Sandwich.
Be sincere.
You're listening to KPOO Reality Sandwich 89.5. This is Reality Sandwich with Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs, and we have Mandy on the line. Mandy Blake, welcome back.
Thank you.
So on the break, Rob and I were just chatting a little bit. We both have a pretty strong background in yoga, and we were talking about the power of the breath and how instrumental that is. We're just kind of curious from a somatic point of view, where does the breath fit in?
The breath is huge. and I would say we have some very specific breath practices that we'll do that are about realigning and freeing up and opening up areas in the chest. Some of those are inspired by yoga even. Mm. And the founder of Strozzi Somatics, Richard Strozzi Heckler, did in his early research in all of this area and domain, quite a bit of work with some people who focused exclusively on the breath, came over from Europe and did breath work exclusively. So it's a big piece of what we do, but probably less explicit than where we tend to put most of our focus, which is on sensation and the breath being included in that. But what we'll do is, like, I'll typically have people pay attention to the temperature, the pressure, and the movement in their body. And you can always feel the movement of your lungs. It's just happening all the time.
Right, totally.
So that's a place where people will often focus first because it's a large part of the body that's always moving and makes sense to focus there.
Right, and I know for myself, like, when I'm under stress, I tend to either stop breathing or my breath gets really high in my chest, mm-hmm. and there's not as much oxygen moving through my system. And when I come back to center, just bringing my attention down, typically I breathe a lot more from my belly, which tends to take deeper and more full breaths. So I've just noticed that as a practice that it really helps me, you know, open up.
Yeah. A big piece of the centering practice that we were talking about earlier is dropping your breath really lower in your lungs, mm-hmm. low into the lower third of your lungs. And it does move more oxygen through your system. It calms your nervous system. And it actually gets more oxygen to your brain so that you have access to more of your best cognitive insight. So it's really, really important. excuse me, but one thing I want to comment on there is that we all have embodied patterns of behavior, and included in that is an embodied pattern of breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody breathes a little bit differently, and everybody has a different habitual way of breathing. And sometimes when I work with people, I'll see people who breathe really deep in their belly, but their chest never moves. Or people who breathe really high up right under their collarbones and the rest of their belly and chest doesn't move. Or somebody who can move their chest and not their belly. And you know, so all these different configurations. what happens for us over time is we kind of shape ourselves towards, and this isn't a conscious process at all. We don't think about this. But what happens is there are certain, you could call them nutrients, really, that are essential for human thriving. And we start to organize around maximizing those nutrients, which is having a sense of safety, having a sense of connectedness to others that feels good to us. And, you know, we're inherently social creatures. We have a limbic brain, which is the emotional part of our brain. We're literally wired for connection with others. So mm-hmm. it's a big part of being. And as we shape around those things, especially early in life when our brains and bodies are in really high gear development, mm-hmm. we'll start to develop patterns of relatedness and patterns in our body that are tied to those patterns of relatedness. So people will you know, come into this work with years' worth of breathing a shallow breath, for example. And as they start to breathe more deeply, they'll maybe start to feel less safe.
Right.
Because it's not a familiar pattern to them. And if you dig way back into the roots of their history, you'd see that somewhere it made sense to kind of contract their breath because in doing that they were able to keep themselves more safe. So, for example, there would be lots of reasons for that, right? But that's just one.
Mm-hmm.
So we get these embodied patterns, and we all have embodied patterns, and that's fine. It's great. It's awesome that we work that way. It means that we can free up a lot of attention for focusing on creative activities. But then the question in this work becomes, are the patterns that you have embodied now most effective in terms of where you're heading? So do you have the skills embodied, the relational skills, the leadership qualities embodied that you need in order to bring bring into the world whatever it is you're trying to bring into the world, whether that's something different in your personal life or, you know, a big social change. And those things are very tied. Your skills and the actions you can take and your physical body are very tied together.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, I totally agree with you, and it's interesting to see how you were mentioning those three universal needs of safety, belonging, and dignity, and how important that is. And I'm thinking also about, for myself, how when a trauma occurs, it could be any kind of trauma from childhood or late in your life, how the body does contract around that trauma for protection and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And just how difficult it is sometimes to get out of that trauma. Like I have clients I work with all the time that know what's going to happen and they know it's not real, but the body takes over. So, you know, developing new practices for opening and extending and moving towards that which you want while, you know, acknowledging what the old patterns are. I can see it is extremely powerful. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that's important, I think, about what you're saying, Rafe, and one of the things that also distinguishes this work from other forms of change, it's like another piece that goes beyond just the awareness, is something that we call somatic opening.
Right.
What happens in trauma is that the body will have a protective reaction. It's highly adaptive. It's really intelligent. So you're in a situation where you're at significant risk of personal injury or in some danger or in some significant danger of having that connection broken. So it can be around any of these three essential nutrients, if you will, where trauma might occur, and your body will have a protective reaction that is a flood of adrenaline, a flood of energy, that kind of thing might happen.
Mm-hmm.
If all of that energy and adrenaline doesn't have a chance to shake itself off, then and kind of move through your system, then your body will, as you were saying, kind of contract around that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll hold that. And this is the way that memories or patterns get held in our physical body. And then in that contraction, your intelligence, your system's intelligence, is basically saying, don't let go of this contraction, because if you do, you won't be safe or connected or seen as worthy, right? Acknowledged as worthy. So those contractions get held, and it's way beyond our rational mind to be able to go, okay, just relax that now.
Right.
So in this process of somatic opening, what needs to happen is in order for someone to take on a new practice, like a new physical practice, and really have it take root in their nervous system, those historical contractions that developed for a very good reason need to kind of be invited to recognize that you're no longer living in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy needs to move through your body and be released. It's kind of like, you know, if a lion is chasing an antelope and the antelope gets away, what you're going to see is like the antelope will give a big shake at the end of that stressful event.
Right.
Essentially, it's shaking off all that stress.
Exactly. I go to the lake all the time, and birds, you know, you watch nature for all the answers. If you have questions, just go sit at Lake Merritt or anywhere in nature and watch what animals do.
Yeah.
I see these beautiful swans. They'll come flying in and land and find their little perfect spot on the water, and they'll be eating their food, and then some other swan will come in, and they'll have this little battle, you know, and then each of them goes their separate way, and what they do every single time is they, like, shake every feather and movement in their body like crazy, and they kind of give this, like, And then they float away like nothing happened. They just get it out right on the spot. It's like they have this trauma. They know it. They're in it. They feel it. They shake it out of themselves, and they move on.
It's so it's much more healthy for our system to do that. And for a lot of reasons and a lot of social conventions, we really don't often allow ourselves the space to do that in the moment. Although in humans, you'll see that in children.
Right. And I think, too, as children, we used to throw tantrums, and it's so taboo, especially as an adult, you have something that is traumatizing or is really traumatic for your drama, and you kind of want to have a tantrum. I think it's okay if you learn how to do it with boundaries and without causing anybody else harm. I think that's an actual practice people should adopt.
It's very useful, and I think one of the really big contributions of this work is that we can help people release and move through some of those old, stuck, contracted places.
Right.
And then that just frees up a whole new self that can take on new practices and go, oh, this thing, whatever it is, decline, or whatever skill it is uncomfortable for me.
Right.
But there's room for it to take root in your system.
Yeah, and a lot of times that negative experience is basically just some type of energy that's entered your body. And if you can make the choice to use that energy, that excitement, that drama, and put it in a direction that's positive that you want to out of choice, then you kind of rearrange the whole situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, easier said than done in certain situations.
Totally,
and always always supported by practice.
Practice.
We kind of have this joke in somatics, and I don't know, but, yoga might have a similar kind of joke, but it's like the answer to every question is practice.
Practice. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, get on the mat or get on the floor and do your practice. Stop thinking, and the downloads just happen.
Mandy, when you were speaking earlier, I was thinking about trauma and also this whole going from an old shape to a new shape. And for many people, when they go through that process, there's like this process of where it's uncomfortable and it's a bit like disorienting and maybe disorganizing. So maybe you could speak a little bit about that, the whole kind of like, because there is like a disorganizational process before this new identity or this new person or new shape emerges. Yeah.
Yeah. I think new identity is a really, a really important aspect of it, because part of what's disruptive is like when we're talking about shape in this particular discourse, we're not actually talking about whether you're tall or short or fat or thin, or we're really talking about what's the shape of your relational capability, what's the shape of your automatic default reactions, what's the shape of your identity and your worldview. So we use that term in a very specific kind of jargony way, and when you're going through this process of awareness and particularly developing somatic awareness, but particularly developing some somatic opening, it's very uncomfortable.
Sure.
Because as you, while it's essential for change, and change is rarely comfortable, you're going to have to let go of something old anyway in order to change, right? But it's like the comfort of the familiar. And particularly when the familiar is something that developed in a wordless way in order to protect something that's essential to you, letting go of that can be completely head-spinning, very disruptive, very confusing, very disorganizing, as you said. And so it's really important to be with someone, be doing this kind of work with someone who knows how to hold that disorganization. And then it also is important to recognize that that's just going to be a part of the process. And it's a good thing. It means change is underway. It means that thing that you want to be able to do differently, those qualities that you want to embody that you don't embody now, they're on their way. And once you get into the muck and the discomfort of it, it's like, that's good news, even though it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, in yoga we call that chitte vritte. That means being in your, you know, poop, being in your stuff.
yep, you're in it.
Yeah,
and it's kind of funny too. Like, you know, we've been talking about kind of the jokes in our circles, and that's one of the big ones in my circles is like, you know, someone who's pretty self aware gets into their chitte vritte, and they're like, "Yay, I'm in my stuff. I'm working on it. I'm in it. I'm in it."
Right.
So it's like you said, it can be really scary, but it also can be like really full of life.
Yes, it's very full of life, and it's like all that. I'll tell you from my own personal experience, all those kind of that long-held contraction that we're talking about, which can show up in the physical body as a physical contraction, but that also looks like a very set or fixed way of thinking, or that also looks like a habitual pattern of mood that I'm in constantly, like starting to drop that stuff off, there's a real sense of lightness and freedom. And, you know, in the midst of all of the head spinning disorganization, there's also excitement and euphoria and almost a sense of relief too.
Right.
So powerfully positive change is possible that way.
And a lot of times when you're in your stuff, when you're in it, the thing that is really nice to lay back on is you know what you need to do. When you're in your stuff, you know what work has to be done. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you don't know what the heck to do. You're so confused that you don't even know where to start. But when you're in your stuff and you're feeling it, then you have a plan of attack and you can go right for it.
Yeah. The other piece with this, I think that's really important, is to not do it alone. Really to
right.
as much
yeah.
as possible, be in a community of practice, because it's important when the going gets rough or challenging or confusing, or to just be with people who are walking a similar path and who you can be in conversation with about it and who you can call when you're in crisis and cheer on when they're in crisis and celebrate each other's successes.
Right. There's a practice in yoga called Sukha Dukkha Punya Apunya. And I won't really get into it too much. You can actually check it out on my YouTube channel. Just go to Google or YouTube. It's Ruddha Yoga, Ruddha. Look up Sukha Dukkha Punya Apunya. And basically what it means is to surround yourself with people who are either on the same path and are happy and energetically positive, or people that you can learn from. And the people that are vampires, the people that take away your energy, the people that are just hard to deal with, you send them, not send them on their way, but you have compassion for them, you give them a prayer, but you take your space and you surround yourself, satsang, with the right people that push you in that direction. It's so hard if you're all alone,
it's
surrounded by
hard.
People who are negative to be a beacon of light. It's almost impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really true. You've just reminded me, Rob, I'm not sure that I mentioned my web address when I earlier offered the centering guide, so maybe I should do that.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you give all your information, your website, how people can get a hold of you, what's going on. Take a few minutes just to plug yourself all the way.
Yeah, so the web address is Stonewater Leader. It's all one word, Stonewater Leader. And you can go there to get the centering guide. It's not complete yet, but it will be ready by June 1st. And would love for people to take a look. I also have a blog there where I blog about questions of leadership and embodied leadership, and how do you build trust, for example? How do you say no? How do you shift your own mood or someone else's mood in a situation where you really need to do that? So definitely invite people to check out the blog. And
Now is that stonewaterleader.com?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So, open invitation, and the best way to get in touch with me is via the website. All the contact details and everything you need is there, so I'll just keep it simple like that.
Hey, Mandy, I have a personal question for you. I was reading your bio, and I noticed you said you're a former international competitive athlete.
Ooh, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I grew up as a very, very serious swimmer, and I sometimes hesitate to say this because reactions are mixed, but I was a synchronized swimmer.
Great.
And what that gives me, I mean, it's really interesting because when I came to this somatic work, I was like, oh, here I am at home. Really very a feeling of real familiarity and like, oh, I've found my life's work. Mm-hmm. My background as a synchronized swimmer just meant that from a very young age, I started doing that when I was 8 years old, and I swam competitively and very seriously up until the age of 20 and competed for the United States. And, so lots and lots and lots of practice of very precision attention to what my body's doing and how it's doing, and also very precision attention to being able to see other people showing up in their bodies.
Yeah, Mandy, I can really, really relate to that. My past life, I was a Division I baseball player. And, throughout playing baseball and taking batting practice a million times, swinging and thinking of each movement of my body, its kinesiology, its somatics, I didn't really know at the time, but I was really a yogic athlete. I was constantly thinking about my breath and my body movement and watching other people. So I think that sports is a really great way to get into other energetic, practices, yoga, somatics, mm-hmm. Tai Chi, whatever.
I really think so too. And, it's funny because you mentioned the breath and I go, synchronized swimming, the breath is really what it's all about.
Right.
and learning how to really be cool and make it look easy even when you're gasping for air it's kind of metaphorical for actually what a lot of leaders face when they're in really tight spots or high pressure situation. It's like, how do I move into this situation with the maximum amount of relaxation, access to kind of my best self, even though I'm under a huge amount of pressure? And so it was good, it was good training for that. And I think anyone who has an athletic background, what I've seen is that people tend to really take to this work.
Right.
Although I also want to say that it has so much to offer to people who don't have that kind of background and who've always been really uncomfortable with their bodies,
right,
or ignored their bodies.
It can, mm-hmm. can help them bring themselves into their bodies finally.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
totally.
Yes.
So, Rafe, how can the listeners get a hold of you? Give
yeah,
them your info.
Yeah, we're just about out of time. So the listeners can get a hold of me. My website is Soma, S-O-M-A, evolution.org. And if they go to somaevolution.org, they can also get the podcast for this episode, as well as past episodes, as well as information on somatic coaching, which I also do. And Rob Stewart,
yeah,
in touch with you.
You can find all my information on my website. It's RUDDHAYoga.com, RudyYoga.com. And anyone who leaves an email that is from the show that heard about this on the show, I'll give a free hour consultation to, either by Skype or in your home. So that offer is out there. Tonight I'm teaching a really rad class. It's called Candlelight Chill. It's at Purusha Studio, 38th and Balboa, and it's a wonderful class to end the week. It's relaxing, it's rejuvenating, and you get some Thai massage on top of it. I think we're about out of time. Mandy, it was great having you on the show. Any last words, Rafe?
No, just, somatics is just an ongoing path, and I just know more and more how much it's helped me grow and expand from, being a able-bodied person, be able to walk, and even though I'm in a wheelchair now, it's tremendously expanded my ability still to be able to connect with others and myself. So it's been a huge gift.
Great.
So, Mandy, thank you so much again, and we'll be talking to everyone soon in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Pleasure talking to you.
You too, Mandy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Fillmore Slim, and I want you to know that you're listening to 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco, California.
Since its inception in March 2004, the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund has given concrete support to Haiti's grassroots movement as it resisted the brutal coup against the democratically elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Since the devastating earthquake on January 20th,